I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Overall assessment scores in the Kansas City, Kansas Public School District last year improved by at least 4 points in each category, and its administrators are committed to making that a trend. Today, District Superintendent Charles Faust is with us to detail what he thinks led to this success. With a greatly diverse student body, we'll ask what challenges the district faces in improving its assessment ratings, and we'll discuss the long distance it still has to go. Later, meet part of the KCUR team leading the Election 2020 Project. It's a nationwide initiative to cover issues and communities with this station at the helm. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. There's good news out of Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools this week. The district just notched big gains in English, language arts, and math. This is based on a report from the Kansas Assessment Program. The number of students rating as proficient in English language arts jumped more than 4 percentage points to nearly 19%. In math, the jump was even higher, more than 6 percentage points, raising the percentage of students rated as proficient to nearly 18%. Science scores were also up by nearly 4 points. While the news is good, the numbers also suggest that about 4 of 5 students in KCK remain below proficiency in all 3 academic areas. Joining us now to talk about this jump is a district superintendent. That's Dr. Charles Faust. And Mr. Superintendent, nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you.
What's your reaction to these numbers? I imagine you're feeling pretty good here.
We are. We are extremely excited about the work that's being done and how our school leaders and our teachers are taking advantage of the professional development that we're providing for them and the access that our students are receiving to be literally proficient on our scores or on our test.
I guess the obvious question is then why? What's causing this upward thrust in scores now?
So we are taking a really defined approach to curriculum and instruction.
And what does that mean, defined approach?
So what we've done is we have
You educators always have these terms, you
yes.
know.
So what we've done is we have taken... So let me back up some. My background is in doing turnaround work.
That's right.
And so typically what happens is there's a slight difference in what we're teaching versus what the state is asking us to teach. And so what we've done, when I say we've taken, you know, processes, we've moved the curriculum to make sure that we are looking specifically at what the state is asking of us. And we're teaching those standards and we're teaching those standards with fidelity, making sure that the teachers are teaching the standards, but the students are doing the verbs. So that's literally what we're doing. There are verbs in each of those standards that means that if given any opportunity, the student should be able to perform that.
You're teaching more to the test, doctor? Do I hear you right?
Well, we're teaching to the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So there's in the state of Kansas, you can't actually teach to the test because they don't release it.
Ah.
So oftentimes individuals will say, oh, well, they're teaching to the test, but you can here. They only get to see it that one time when they see when it's released for the students. But what we're doing is teaching to the state curriculum. And so we've aligned our curriculum to align to the state. And so, of course, in the state, so the curriculum is aligned to any of the state testing that they're giving.
In a news release touting these scores, your district called these unprecedented gains. What does that mean exactly?
So what we have is that each quarter, the state will have interim assessments. So interim assessments will track where your students are given if that a state assessment were given that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found is that we based on from the 2017-18 school year to now, we have hit double digit growth. And so that is unprecedented. So typically in the lifespan of, you know, most school leaders, they'll get 3-4 percentage points. But what I found is that by connecting the professional development for all of our teachers and the professional development for our leaders and teaching them how to teach it to the students, it provides our students, you know, celebrations.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, those students who were saying, I'm not good in math, I wasn't good in math, and they began to build a block for mm-hmm. math. So what we're doing is like, no, what we just provided you access. This is what it would look like. This mm-hmm. is how it should be taught to you. So they're gathering a fondness of the math. So literally when we got here, I had 11.4% in math. This last assessment was at 21.3%.
Wow. That's almost double.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that tells us that
I'm good at math. That's how I knew that.
You are. So what that's telling us is that our students do love to learn. We still have a long ways to go.
You know, in reading about you, I know you're a competitive guy.
Yes.
So I gather this kind of movement is something that you have internalized in some ways.
Definitely, definitely. I wanted to know when I first got here, who is the top performing school district? And so what I shared with our principals in our meeting is that, you know, we had been deemed as the one of the lowest performing schools in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that I wanted to come here. Mm-hmm. I wanted to come here and work because it's the lowest performing. Like, there's no reason for us to be the lowest performing. And so look to see who has the highest. And I said, oh, we can do this. Because what I found is that in athletes, we don't compare. Athlete, if they don't compare themselves, you're the number 99, you're not comparing yourself to number 98.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know, what is number one doing?
Right.
And
right.
So that's what we've been doing, looking specifically and saying, what are they doing? How are they doing it? And we do know that some of it is what I do, air quotes, cultural capital. That does play a factor. However, we have to make up the ground for those students who don't have what's considered the lived experience.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what scores like this do to the morale in your district.
Yes. And so what I've shared with them is that, you know, in districts where it's low performing, you typically will couple that with low morale.
I was going to say, people are always getting beaten up,
yes,
up about the head, right?
All yeah. the time. So now it's like you are moving the needle. And actually, I mean, you're actually picking up the needle and placing it somewhere else in a positive way. So morale is definitely moving to a brighter spot,
right,
for teachers, for our leaders, for our labor workers, everyone, because this is a celebratory time for our students.
Let's drill down just a little bit here, Doctor. The word proficient is used a lot when it comes to education. Mm-hmm. When we talk about reaching proficiency, what do we mean? What's that word proficient mean?
So grade level.
Mm-hmm.
It means grade level.
In simple terms.
In simple terms.
Because I know in Kansas, there are four levels of achievement on the state exam. And by proficient, I gather we're talking about level two.
Level three.
Level three.
Yes.
Okay, where student level two is a basic understanding, but level three is a notch up from that. That's what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Here.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the state does set that at level three. And so there's a score that they have to get. It's usually around about a 300. In order to be deemed at a level three, which is proficient.
I'm visiting with Dr. Charles Faust. He's superintendent of Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools. Is proficiency the standard we should be considering here? Because I know the state, the Department of Education, has shifted away from standardized tests in some ways in recent years as the measure of how students are doing. The model now has a different definition where a successful high school graduate has academic preparation and cognitive preparation, technical skills to be successful in post-secondary education or the attainment of an industry-recognized certification. Is that the standard that you're looking at here, or are you looking at something else?
All of that.
All of that.
I would say D, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is we just need to make sure that our students are able to do math at grade level,
mm-hmm.
that they are able to read at grade level so that when we graduate that student, that they, if they choose college or if they choose career, that they can read the material at that grade level.
Yeah.
What would happen is if you aren't using the proficiency measure, they may go to college and they get a college textbook and they can't read or comprehend the information that's in that textbook. And so we do have to garner, and I understand all of the issues around, oh, it's a test, it's a one day of a test. But I also go back to say that, okay, I was a teacher. I had to take the praxis, one mm-hmm. test. I had to make sure that I had to pass that test in order to gain my certification to teach. Just as a CPA,
right, sure.
everyone has to have a
The world works
measure.
That way, you're
it
saying.
It does. It does.
Yeah. You know, before we go too deep in this conversation, I want to point out to the flip side of the coin here. No question you're making progress. You've documented that here. But the numbers also suggest, as I said in the opening, that more than 4 in 5 students in KCK scored below proficient in all three categories here, English, language, arts, and math and science. That suggests y'all have a long way to go.
Absolutely. And that's what we have to, why we have to continue working hard. The celebratory is that, you know, it's easy to say that you can't do it. We can't do it. What we're doing is showing students that they can do it and be successful at doing it. So when you start to celebrate, then other students, other teachers saying, hey, this kid can do this. Hey, mom, this your child is able to do this work. So yeah. It provides that intrinsic celebratory time because we have to give the we have to be able to provide for our students, you know, that nurturing, that social emotional, sure. But we also have to give them a solid education.
You know, competitive guys like you, part of being competitive is you have goals.
Yes.
Okay. So 3 years from now, if you're at 1 in 5 students are proficient in these different areas, where do you want to be?
So I'll backtrack. So our ultimate goal is to be 40%. That's mm-hmm. the goal by this year.
By which year?
By the end of this year, we want to be at 40.
Wow.
That's a push.
That's called, twice where you are today.
Yes, that's called our stretch goal. However, the state says that by 2030, we have to be at 70%, 75%. And so we have tracked it. And so we are doing what we call the trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And we are outpacing it at this point. In order to get to 70% by 2030.
I mean, 70% by 2030, that's a revolution in Kansas City, Kansas public schools, if you can get there. If you can
yes.
get that,
yes.
then you ought to be president of the United States or something, right? I mean that's well, right. That would be remarkable if you could get there.
It would be. But, you know, the part that what we have to be able to do is first, we have to tell our teachers they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing.
You know, I bet there's people out there who are shaking their heads about this idea that so many students are still scoring below proficiency. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's fair, but there's also this reality of the challenges that you face in urban education when it comes to teaching students from low-income families and who may not speak English at home. In that sense, your challenge is very similar to what the Kansas City and Central School districts are facing on the Missouri side. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So it's no different, I share with our fellow educators. We are given the best that we have. When students walk through the door, we assess them mentally. We as teachers, we say, this is what the prescription is.
Mm-hmm.
We differentiate it and we celebrate growth.
Mm-hmm.
So a student may not walk in speaking, you know, English, but the growth is by the end of, you know, the first 9 weeks, that they are, you know, saying about 4 or 5 words, if that's the, so every student has, it's called differentiation.
Mm-hmm.
Every student has a different goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you have to celebrate it in, you know, in urban education. It is what it is.
Hey, how many different languages are spoken in Kansas City, Kansas public schools?
So we run about 70.
70?
Yes.
Okay. How many of these students, for them, English is a second language?
Yeah, well, I don't have that specific
okay.
number.
But it's a lot.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, because people compare your district to Lee Summit or the Blue Valley school districts where everyone there speaks English. You're dealing with students who are walking in the door who don't know how to speak the language, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me go back to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. Let me go to Jamie from Olathe. Jamie, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, this is Jimmy. Actually, I just didn't want to say my name. My name is actually Euro. I teach in KCK. I teach PE. And I was wondering about Dr. Faust, since we're kind of doing big leaps in the academical standards and we're moving towards the right direction, I wonder if he was willing us to lead towards kind of meeting the national standards in PE and physical education, because what I notice in my day-to-day basis, especially on a shorter day on Wednesdays and even the other days, especially the older students, 4th and 5th, in elementary schools, they get maybe about 15 minutes of recess, and that's not a whole lot. I wondered if we're going to kind of do strides and match the national standards in a physical education kind of perspective as well.
Yeah, interesting question. Here we are focused on academics, and you've got physical education on the side here too, Doctor.
So what actually happens on those half days? It's a modified schedule. So we have to shorten the day because students, we get out 2 hours early. So in order to get every subject content to meet them, we have to shorten everyone. So the national standards, yes, that's the national standard. And then we take apart and say to make sure that we are meeting the state standards. So
I guess it goes without saying there's a connection between physical fitness and the ability to progress in the classroom.
Yes,
right?
Yes. And we should be making sure that we are being accountable for the rules that are set forth by the state and by those national standards.
You know, in reading about you, Doctor, one of your strategies in other places where you've worked is to deploy more resources to the elementary level where at-risk students get off track. For instance, the Star reported that you once took a third, fourth, and fifth grade reading specialist and sent her to support kindergarten, first, and second grade. Why was that the right way to go in your view?
So
you got to get them young. Is that where you're going?
Yes. Yeah. So the foundational years. Those are the foundational years where students are learning to read and learning the sounds, learning that phonemic awareness. And so by the time they get to third, fourth, fifth, we technically would say you're learning to read pre-K through two. And then you're reading to learn three through 12. And so when we would put a specialist just to help our 3, 4, and 5, mm-hmm. we were then performing that tier two instruction. So we wanted to do tier one mm-hmm. and support teachers with the foundational year so that when they got to third grade, that they were able to read and comprehend.
Have you made some of the same moves in KCK?
So we have, we are putting some of those in place. What I've shared with our folks at the elementary level, we have instructional coaches in those buildings. And so,
and you've actually got those coaches out of the main office and into the schools, if I understand
yes,
correctly.
Yes, they are there. And so there's one for reading and there's one for math. It used to be where there was one did reading and math and for K-2, and then the other did 3-5 math and reading. But that's hard. And so we just evened it up. So we have seen some growth from there, from moving it all reading and all math. And so that person is only responsible for one content area.
This is really important stuff, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
And I love it.
You know, I was going to say, what drives you here? What energizes you about all of this?
So I remember being that student in some of the classes, those upper tier classes, and not really understanding that college math. And if I only had someone to explain it to me, then I could do it. I am very passionate about making sure that students have an opportunity to get full access to curriculum. And it hurts me when we as educators don't give them that access. So as a superintendent, coming in this role, I was like, I can make sure that that happens for all students.
You remember your own experience.
I do. I do remember that.
Dr. Charles Faust, the superintendent of Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools, is my guest. Let's talk about some of your needs going forward, Doctor. What are the need? I'm thinking about the need for more bilingual teachers. Does it go without saying that would be a need for you?
Yes, that is a need for bilingual teachers. We need a need for special ed. Right now, it's deemed as a crisis throughout the country for special ed teachers. And so we're looking special ed, we're looking bilingual.
The pipeline is not as full as it needs to be when it comes to bilingual teachers.
Absolutely. And so what we're doing, we're looking at other states to see if we can attract them to come to Kansas.
How do you do that?
So we send our folks out, our recruiters out, and we show them data of what we're doing, and we try to make sure that it's enticing for them to come here. So we're working on a new campaign for recruiting, and we were just realigning some things actually earlier today to make sure that our staff is supported in that recruitment effort.
Can you pay those bilingual teachers what they need to be paid to bring them to Kansas City, Kansas?
So we're paying our special ed. we're paying our math and science, and we call those hard to fill positions. And we can definitely look at our bilingual teachers too.
What about your student to teacher ratio? What's that look like? What does it need to be?
So, you know, I believe that we can always do better. Always. The national state average, or what research states, is that an effective classroom runs best if you can get it down to 12, mm-hmm. under 12. Well, the problem with that is we don't have enough money. So with 23,000 students, to have only 12 students in a class, we don't have the building environment. So then you have to calculate that amongst, you know, your resources. So, you know, what I would believe is in that those lower K-2, if we can get it to 18, mm-hmm. and, you know, 25 at the elementary, and, you know, sometimes at that secondary 27, that's a great number. And we have to work on scheduling, as we're doing right now, looking at how we schedule students.
Do you have a chance to speak to people like Governor Laura Kelly or state lawmakers about your needs and what kind of difference those types of changes would make?
So, yes, we have Bill Brady, who's one of our lobbyists. Mm-hmm. And so Bill does take
care.
Yes,
I knew him when he was a lawmaker
over there. Oh, okay. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. So he does a great job fighting for us in Topeka, and we share our needs. And so the answer to your question would be yes.
You know, just a final point, Doctor. Shortly after you got here, you went on a listening tour in each of your district's high schools. What did you learn?
So I learned, one, that our community is invested in our students. I also learned that our students are invested in their learning. From that, I also brought a superintendent student council. And so I meet with them every 3 months. And I continue that listening and learning, and we put together action items. And so right now, those individuals, so they're 5 high schools. So we invite 5 of the students from the 5 high schools. So it's 25 students. And we are then now getting ready to go on a campaign with those students so that they can speak with their school leaders. So I'll be there with the 5 leaders from the Superintendent's Council, and we will sit down and talk with the administration about their issues and concerns.
Well, Doctor, this is really important stuff. Congratulations on progress, and when you have more success, come back and see us.
I definitely will, and I will see you soon.
Congratulations.
Okay,
you
thank
bet.
You.
That's Dr. Charles Faust. Again, he's superintendent of Kansas City, Kansas Public Schools, seeing higher test scores these days. After a short break, when we come back, we'll talk about a new project here at KCUR. It's called Election 2020, America Amplified. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Did you make a New Year's resolution to sign up for Kraske Off Mic, my weekly newsletter? It's not too late. Go to kcur.org/Kraske and subscribe for exclusive content from me and highlights from the up-to-date team each week. Sign up now at kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, we continue our State of Kansas City series with a look at the city's art scene, plus why Kansas City's art world is at a turning point. That's on tomorrow's Up to Date. Well, when it comes to the 2020 election, KCUR has a message for you. We're listening. KCUR is taking the lead on an ambitious initiative aimed at strengthening public media's ability to express many community perspectives about relevant issues during this election cycle. The project is called Election 2020, America Amplified, and it's funded with a $1.9 million grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The key here is to offer you insights from people talking about issues that matter to them and their communities. Joining us now are two members from the Election 2020 team. They are Jennifer Tufts. She's the project manager. Jennifer, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Elisa Barba is the senior editor. Nice to have you too, Elisa. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Well, where did the idea for this project come from, Jennifer?
The idea came from, I think, The desire to change the way that traditional journalism might have been created around elections in the past, where maybe a national group or maybe one group on one part of the country was talking about what was happening in communities in other parts of the country. They would send maybe a journalist for a limited amount of time to find out, oh, what's happening, and then come back and say, this is what's happening in that place. So the desire was to, instead of doing that, activate journalists who are already on the ground in communities, who already have relationships, connect them to a national dialogue about this coverage.
Using the public radio network, if you will, to get more voices into the conversation.
Exactly.
Too many people, Lisa, have been ignored for too many years across the country when it comes to the issues in their community and in their own lives?
I think that there was a feeling, certainly among a lot of the coastal public media elite, that they were not really hearing the voices of America. I mean, I think there was a lot of surprise after the 2016 election and a concern that we were not covering the country in the way that we needed to. We were not listening to the voices that were out there. And so I think KCUR was seen as the perfect place to found this organization. And
being right here in the middle of the country, heartland, all
that.
Yeah,
not just that. I think KCUR has also been really at the vanguard of community engagement, which is what this is all about. This is about kind of turning the idea of journalism a little bit on its head, where we go into communities and we say, okay, what's the deal? What's going on with you? Not who are you voting for necessarily, but what issues are foremost and center in your community?
As opposed to going into the communities and saying, I'm doing a story on X because I understand there might be an issue here.
Exactly.
Letting them tell us what the issues
are. Exactly. And taking the reporting from there outward.
Yeah. So Jennifer, how's this whole thing going to work?
Great question.
Yeah.
We're having a meeting this week to start to answer some of those questions. The overall structure is that we're working with collaborations that public media has called regional journalism collaborations. They already exist around covering a specific region of the country or covering a specific issue. So one example would be Side Effects Public Media that covers healthcare topics. So we are, as a central team here in Kansas City, going to partner with those collaborations. There's eight that we're partnering with throughout the country to help them accomplish some specific community engagement goals that we hope will bring out some innovative journalism.
So, Lisa, if I gather correctly, then part of your work is going to be doing original reporting, sending reporters out, and part of it is coordinating with other folks who are already doing some of this kind of work.
I think it's going to be a lot of that coordinating. I'm the senior editor of this project, and ultimately we will be producing at least three national reporting projects that emerge out of all these vast collaborations. Collaborations that are spread all across the country. Harvest Public Media, which is of course based here at KCUR, is one of them. But they are all going to be doing different kinds of engagement within their communities. They're going to be doing listening sessions. They're going to be doing crowdsourcing. They're going to be doing all kinds of different things. And from that, what we hope and what we will facilitate is that issues and ideas and voices will bubble up that I will turn into a great national reporting project.
How do you think people are going to react to this? What's your sense? What's your hope?
Here's what I hope. I hope that what you will hear on the air connected to the Election 2020 Amplifying America project, that you will hear voices and ideas and a kind of format that you haven't heard before, that your ears will perk up and you say, oh, that's interesting. And I think ultimately
you're hearing the voices of real people.
Absolutely. And I think ultimately what we want to get to is we want to deepen an understanding of what America's hopes and aspirations are, not in terms of who's going to be president, but what do they hope and aspire for in their communities.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about a new project based here at KCUR. It's called Election 2020, America Amplified. Jennifer, this money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, $1.9 million. It's a lot of money. What's it going to go for?
Great question. It is going to fund those community engagement initiatives. In some places, somebody might need to hire a new journalist who represents a community that maybe hasn't been represented or who is going to dedicate their work to this project. And so it might fund part of that salary. It will fund the public events that happen. It's going to fund variety of things. The proposals that have come in from all across the country represent the ideas that the collaboratives have right now, and then those will be continually fleshed out, and the money will go to fund those as they rise up.
So stations, public radio stations, and then other journalistic outlets can apply for this money, if I'm hearing you correctly?
Yes. So that process is finished. We had a survey that went out earlier in the year, and so we got feedback from different stations in public media that were interested in using the work. It is radio stations and then also other outlets. The exact journalism isn't confirmed yet, but we hope that it is more expansive.
Alisa, the fruits of your labor, are we going to hear it only on public radio? Is there hope it's going to appear in newspapers, public television? What might we expect?
I think it's going to be public media, right? It's going to be public radio. It's going to be public TV. I think we will definitely have some public TV. There definitely will be digital output that you will see. I think KCR.org people will be able to go to your website and find what we're doing. Look for our logo and click on that. All of that it's a work in progress, Steve. We're mm-hmm. trying to figure it out. And I think pulling back a little bit, this idea of community engagement, this is kind of the hot new buzzword,
yes.
I think, for a lot of journalism, not just public media, even commercial journalism, the idea that we are serving the public and we need to listen to the public better than we have in the past.
But again, if I'm interested in the latest horse race poll in terms of who's ahead in Iowa, this really isn't your focus. You're talking, again, to people about what their concerns are.
People are talking to us.
To us,
yes,
right.
About their concerns. We are deliberately avoiding covering the horse race. Everybody's mm-hmm. going to be doing that. I mean, everybody's following that. That's not what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at, kind of what is the American dream for 2020? Where are we going as a country?
And part of that work, I assume, means actually calling community meetings and having people come to a central location in their town to visit with a member of the team?
Yes. And we're calling these community meetings, we're calling them listening sessions. A number of our collaborations that are part of this project want to do those community listening sessions. I think one of the biggest goals for all of these stations, and certainly for our project, is to expand the reach of public radio, to reach communities that, in other words, if we just put up on our website, come to a community meeting, we will get, our supporters and our fans already. We want to reach people from communities that we haven't reached.
How do you do that?
It's an interesting game.
Easy to ask and harder to pull off.
Yeah. You have to publicize the event outside of public media. You have to do it in the newspaper. You have mm-hmm. to do it on AM radio. You have to send out postcards. You have to have an issue that people are concerned about. So you have to find people where they are. Maybe you do a little pop-up newsroom in a local library where you say, here I am, ask a reporter, what are you concerned about? And there you hand out postcards saying, we're going to have a meeting. We're going to be talking about this kind of stuff. And again, the meeting is not necessarily convened by the journalists. It might be convened by a local a local organization that really has roots in that community. Mm-hmm. And the journalist is there to listen with no microphone, necessarily. They're not recording this. They're there to learn what is the story in this community, rather than coming in with a story.
Jennifer, in some ways, you guys are really pushing against sort of the momentum of the industry right now, which has been downsizing. I'm referring to just the media industry at large. You're talking, and the media industry at large has been demanding more and more copy from journalists day in and day out. Again, you're going in a different direction here.
We are going in a different direction. We also on our central team have a community engagement director. We have a media training manager. Those members of the team centrally will help empower journalists in spaces throughout the country to do work in a new way, and maybe to be able to meet the demand. We hope that our central team will provide support that might be missing in places where there are fewer resources.
There's one concern we've had from a caller who's worried that only white voices will be represented here. Respond to that if you would, Jennifer.
The goal of the project is for many voices. We intentionally are creating all of our training to help get into communities that are not white. We are very interested in hearing from rural communities who we want geographic as well as demographic variety in this representation, because that is the picture of America.
Yeah, Alisa.
As well as political variety.
Right.
We're really looking for a diverse set of voices from every single community in America. And that's what we've missed in the past, frankly.
I was going to say, the argument, again, would be that some people, some parts of the political spectrum don't really want to talk to reporters these days. How do you deal with that?
It's a delicate dance. I think, again, one of our very explicit goals is to build trust in public media, build trust in media in general. So how do we do that? I think we do that by listening. And that's our premise here, is that if we listened to your community's needs and aspirations, whatever they may be, and we reflect that back in our reporting, we can build trust.
Jennifer, give us some sense of the scope of the project geographically. What are we looking at here? Is it going to be just the heartland? Is that sort of where the focus is here? Is that what you're saying?
It's not just the heartland. In the heartland, we'll be facilitating and coordinating from the heartland out. But right now, we have 8 collaborative partners that we're working with, and they span the U.S. So we have the Rocky Mountain states represented in the Mountain West News Bureau.
Wow.
And then we go all the way across to the New England News Collaborative, which is in New England, obviously. And then in Indiana and Iowa, we have partners.
Florida,
the
Georgia.
I-4 corridor in Georgia.
Yeah.
So California as well will have some connection there. There's an opportunity to hear from people everywhere they are throughout the country.
The team has been assembled. Do I have that right, Alisa? Or
yep.
Are you still hiring people now?
Nope, we're all hired. We're all assembled. We are all in Kansas City this week to kind of meet and figure things out, figure out where we're going. A lot of people are based here in Kansas City. I happen to be based in San Diego.
Well, good for you.
Our community, what do we call it? Community engagement director is in Rhode Island, but everybody else is here in Kansas City.
And when can people expect to see the results of all of what you're doing? When can we look forward to that, Jennifer?
So our first results will be sort of more internal, because we're going to be working to train journalists in this new way of using community engagement strategies. And then, Alisa, you can talk about when the journalism content might show up.
You're gonna start seeing some content fairly soon. We have partnered with a group that did some polling recently across the country, polling on immigration and refugees, and we're going to do some reporting on that. That will just kind of be our first foray into saying, this is a new kind of reporting, this is a new kind of engagement, and listen to this.
Well, it's not like you didn't pick a great year to go out and do some of this stuff. The work is needed arguably more than ever, Jennifer.
We're very excited. There's a lot of momentum, and in our team, it's a very collaborative group. Everybody is coming with different ideas, and I think we're building something centrally that is exciting. And then the most exciting thing is that really we're going to be informed by what people are saying in the communities where we're going to be doing the work.
Such an interesting project. Again, it's called Election 2020 America Amplified. You can see the work on KCUR's website as the election season progresses. I want to thank Jennifer Tufts, the project manager for America Amplified, and Alisa Barba, the senior editor for the project. Thank you both, and good luck with it.
Thank you.
Thank you so
much.
Eager
to see it. Coming up, some fun stuff to do on your weekend with Spencer and Brian.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in the sky. Blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Oh, why? Oh, why can't my dream come true? Oh, why? There must be peace and understanding.
Well, look who's back. It's the king, but also two kings here in the newsroom. Brian McTavish, he follows and writes about pop culture. With him, Spencer Hardwick, founder and curator of Wire KC Weekender. They come here each week to talk about cool stuff to do in the weekend. Where have you guys been?
Happy New Year.
I haven't seen you in forever.
Well, it's a shame, but we're back.
The holidays are, thank God, the history, the holidays are past us.
Well, thank God for the weekend. We have to come back at some point. So here we are.
Well, speaking of comebacks, the king's making one this weekend?
Well, yes, he never really left.
Okay, he never left.
Okay, here's a dream before we get into the Elvis dream. I have a dream the Chiefs beat the Houston Texans on Sunday.
That's going to happen.
At Arrowhead. And that
they're 10-point favorite. That's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
More than a dream.
But it has to happen for it to happen. Anyway,
oh, it has
here's
to
another
happen.
Dream. Elvis lives, if not in body. Elvis Presley lives, you betcha. He lives on in hunka hunka burning love spirit.
Wow.
That's a lot of hunkas.
So good to hear this.
It's good to hear it. I love to hear Elvis, man. He would have been 85 this week.
Is that right?
85.
Is that right?
The Big E, 85. But, you know, his stature as the king of rock and roll remains. Do I have to say it? Let me say it gloriously. Ageless. So, in honor of Elvis and his birthday week, we have the Elvis Tour Years Concert starring noteworthy Elvis impersonator Frank Worth and the Vibrations. 7 o'clock, Saturday night, Voodoo Lounge at Harrah's North Kansas City Casino. You can get an idea from Frank as he does his Elvis thing, an idea of the live power of Elvis melding gospel, R&B, country, and channeling all that through his talent
it's
and natural
charisma.
It's
almost unbelievable
charisma.
We're sitting here talking about him today.
Let me
it's
ask you this.
It's incredible.
Will there... It isn't. It isn't. Because it's Elvis. Elvis lives on. Will there be another Elvis, guys?
Let's hope so.
I'm still
so.
Trying I'm to figure out how to spell hunka hunka.
Well, I got it right here if you
okay,
want to see. Anyway, okay. There will never be another Elvis, but we don't need another because Elvis... lives deep in the Ozarks,
okay.
Some say. Maybe.
Yes.
He does, I think.
Yes, he does. I think
Thank
that's
you so
right.
much. I'll see you at the Elvis Show.
To find a job is like a haystack needle. Cause where he lives, they don't use colored people. Living just enough for the situation.
Spencer, what do we have here?
Absolutely. So we know a ton of conversations in Kansas City on race and housing discrimination begin with a street named Troost. This, The Land of Opportunity, is a documentary presented by KCPBS, and it's supposed to give the story of integration into the Santa Fe neighborhood and uses it as one example of the fight for housing rights across America during the Great Depression.
Huh.
So we are all very familiar with the entry point of Troost. This documentary, and it'll be on tonight actually, really gives us a different flavor and a different insertion point to a very, very important an ongoing conversation. So this is being highlighted in branding as the fight for housing rights that transformed Kansas City's racial barrier. So this is happening tonight, 23rd and Linwood, from 6 to 8 p.m., and has generated a lot of buzz online.
So this is a public forum, you're saying?
Yes, public forum, big documentary presented by Nico Giles, from what I understand. And this is something that just popped up over the last 3 or 4 days and really caught fire, so really trying to get people plugged into it.
And it's going to be tonight, and tell us where it is going to be again.
2310 East Linwood Boulevard, 6 to 8 p.m.
Okay, and that's tonight again.
Yeah, that's tonight.
Okay.
The rare weekend, Thursday weekend event.
Let's move on here to our comedian, Kathleen Madigan, Brian.
That's right, Kathleen Madigan. Well,
Kathleen Madigan, sorry.
Well, you can say whatever you want. It's your show. I'll say Kathleen.
If some people say that.
That's what I just said. Okay.
You wouldn't know it some days.
Not today. We're right behind you. Kathleen Madigan, stand-up comic master, in my view, 8 o'clock Saturday night at the Arvis Bank Theater at the Midland. Let's talk about her just a bit. Did I mention she was a St. Louis native? Did I mention, I'm going to tell you, that she made her mark on late-night talk shows, Netflix specials, and the like, but she has specialized in being a live attraction, like 250 shows a year for 30 years. Lots of laughs. I'll guarantee laughs. Here she is. Let's hear a bit. She's reflecting on going to Catholic school as a kid and the vital importance placed on not bothering Jesus.
This is Kathleen Madigan.
In a Catholic school, I was given a laundry list of people to contact before the nuns said, because otherwise I'm bothering Jesus. You are going to call these people, Kathleen, before you bother Jesus. You could start with your guardian angel. He's got nothing to do 24 hours a day except tend to your needs. If he's not available, you can speak to the saint in charge of the activity you're upset about. Every single saint has been assigned an assignment. You can speak to Jesus's mother if you'd like to. You can give Mary a shout, but you are not to bother. Okie dokie.
Yeah, she's the real thing.
Good.
She's the real thing. Okie dokie, indeed. Stand up. You know, she's never used it as a bridge to a sitcom or a movie deal, but rather a highly gratifying, amusing end in itself. In other words, she's darn good. That's Kathleen Madigan, Saturday at the Midland.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans
and Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked Cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
We're celebrating beans and cornbread. Spencer, how come?
Absolutely, because it's KC Restaurant Week.
Oh, it's a big week.
Yum. Whether you're a hardcore foodie, a casual foodie, or just looking for something, a nice bite to eat, there's something for you, as this time, over 45 new restaurants will be joining the slate for KC Restaurant
Week. This has gotten to be a pretty big deal.
It has. It's all I hear about, you know, starting the new year. And so let me tell you about a few of the restaurants. One you've definitely heard of, and three you may not have heard of. Just a few things to check out.
Yeah.
First one is the Savoy.
Ah.
Pretty sure almost everybody here is very familiar with the Savoy. It's a modern take now on a classic Midwest fare.
And it's made a comeback, hasn't
it? It's made a huge comeback now within the 21C Hotel downtown. Used to have these huge savory dishes. I remember when I was very young, shut down for a period, and now it is back.
Yeah.
The second one is a little tucked away secret called the District Biscuit House. Have you guys heard about this?
No, I've not.
I'm going to argue that this is the best breakfast sandwich in the city. You may not have heard about it because it's tucked away in the Adams Mark Hotel across from Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah.
Gourmet chef took the breakfast biscuit, chicken, bacon, all these gourmet dishes, and fused them into some delicious treats. So if you're going to the game Sunday, or even if you're not, this may be a good thing to try out.
Good idea.
That sounds great.
One more is the Brewer's Kitchen. These are burgers marinated in beer. You heard it here first. Brewer's Kitchen. So that's another one. So Google that one. I think that that one's off Broadway, but I'm not quite sure. Just a few things for you to check out. Overall, a lot of things to celebrate in terms of the food scene here in Kansas City.
KC Restaurant Week. Here it comes next week, right?
Yep. 10th through the 19th, so starting tomorrow.
What do we have here, Brian?
Well, that's puzzle-making music. It is the Kemper Museum of Contemporary Art's very first puzzle party. You can be
puzzle
part
party.
Of it. Yes. It's a chance. Look, bottom line, here's a chance to put down the phone. The phone.
My wife loves puzzles.
Yeah,
loves
but she puzzles. Doesn't cheat and look on the phone, right?
No, so, that's a jigsaw.
All I'm saying is a jigsaw puzzle is the perfect opportunity to just put down the phone for an hour or two and have some good old-fashioned fun. Be part of it. Collaborate on art-themed puzzles. Create your own jigsaw. 12:30 to 3 Saturday.
And there's hot cocoa there, I'm told.
And hot cocoa.
How can you lose there?
Actually, go for the cocoa. Just go for the cocoa.
And finally today,
pour me something tall and strong. Make it a It's only 12:30, but I don't care. It's
what's all this about, Spence?
You know, as a DJ, I developed a healthy appreciation for music, and that includes country. And so my man Alan Jackson here, this 5 o'clock somewhere video was shot on a boat.
Uh-huh.
I would imagine that that is the very feeling that the folks who are going to this, the Kansas City Boat and Sports Show, are seeking to be on that boat. Three big things I think are happening here that really stand out to even someone who's not particularly interested in boats. First thing's called the Hog Trough, okay? It's a fishing seminar where you can, with a 5,000-gallon, 40-foot-long fish tank,
where
some of the best fishers in the business are going to teach you how to catch and release.
No kidding.
That's
that
number
sounds cool.
One, okay? So even if you're not into boats, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
The second one is the paddle sports pool. Anyone here like kayaking or anything like that?
Yeah.
They've got another huge pool. You can try out different kinds of kayaks.
No,
this one's 40 feet long. And then the last thing, there's something even for the kids. There's a Willow Creek trout pond where there's going to be tons of little minnows and smaller fish, so even your kids can learn how to fish.
Can I learn how to fish?
You absolutely can.
Where's this going to be?
This is going to be KC Bartle Hall. It's going to be there's going to be something for everyone, so come on out.
Next few days. Okay, that's Spencer Hardwick, Brian McTavish. Gentlemen, thank you both very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Kansas legislature convenes on Monday, if you can believe it, but tomorrow we'll have a preview of the issues that lawmakers will be facing in the 2020 session. You can find and follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Chelsea Angstrom. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.